Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Compare and Campaign. I am your host, as always, Tom Lando, and with me, as always, is my co-host and co-GM,
McGill.
And it is the 9th of January, 2024, when we're recording this. We're recording episode 176 on this day. And, I mean, last time we began Operation Riverbed, the big assault on the Mantle began with a naval engagement, and our heroes, of Coyote's Aegis, have, lost their boat. They got a boat, they named it Frisky Dingo, and it sunk.
And short-lived, just like Frisky Dingo.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, for those who don't know, Frisky Dingo was a cartoon. It was made by some of the people who made Archer, before Archer was big. But yeah, they rushed from their sunken vessel to another vessel, the Slayer Battleship, and then from there, we're planning to hijack another boat. Exciting stuff.
I like to imagine all the people on the Slayer battleship singing Slayer like sea shanties.
I could do that.
Over on my end of things, we are going to the RPG Danger Room. We're going to talk about an RPG that I gave Tom a copy of for Christmas, and we've talked about it in passing a whole bunch. But we've never actually looked at it.
I think we did look at it, actually, in one game. We just didn't look at it in detail. We looked at it from afar.
That's right. We gave like a glancing overview, but now we're gonna do the deep dive into Gozer. And Tom, you said I was the GM off the top. That's right. But in this case, it stands for the Goose Master.
I knew that. I knew that when I said it, oddly enough.
And I figure on this episode, we'll do a closer look at Gozer, having touched upon it before. And hey, maybe we can stumble through some character creation together, because there's a lot of randomly generated content that goes into character creation.
I can do that.
Heck yeah.
But, yeah, was there anything else you wanted to talk about this episode, or are we launching right into Coyote's Aegis?
Maybe I should put a disclaimer that if it seems like I've got a whole lot of weird, buzzy energy to be on this show, it's because I spent much of today dealing with one of my accounts being hacked and someone trying to use my money to buy shoes, to buy a whole bunch of sneakers. So that was a really stressful process, and it has left me feeling a little on edge.
By the way, you know, I always call it Coyote's Aegis. I'm pretty sure Aegis is one of those words that you're supposed to pronounce different. It's like Aegis or something.
Was it Aegis? I thought Aegis was acceptable. Aegis.
Well, then we'll say that. A bit of housekeeping right at the top. I forgot last time that Connor currently has one level of exhaustion from having to swim in heavy armor following the destruction of the Frisky Dingo. However, I allowed as a special action for Hex to negate this by spending one use of Indomitable to help Connor along. With the idea being that Hex has sort of pushes himself in order to get Connor through the water despite his heavy armor. We've already had a volley of arrows shower the deck of the Frisky Dingo, or of the Slayer, perhaps. I can't remember which order it happened in, but people have taken a bit of damage from that volley of arrows. However, Between their jetpacks and their elevated position aboard the Slayer, and the proximity of the Royal Dragon as it attempts to rescue survivors from the sinking ship that struck the front of the battleship, boarding the enemy vessel is a trivial matter for our heroes. The vessel is small, such that they are immediately in The vessel is small, such that they are immediately in close proximity with its crew of six. Each crewman wields a scimitar and wears leather armor. They also carry blow darts, like the ones that have been seen previously in Agalloch. So, storming the ship over the side using their jetpacks, the party attacks the Royal Dragon, the enemy ship with six people on it. And so they land on the boat. Connor is up first. Hex and Connor are currently in the middle of the ship toward the back, away from the helm. There is currently one enemy at the helm. And Gent comes up sort of on the other side of the ship. So they get onto, I don't know, if it's not the helm, is it the bow?
Is the bow, the stern?
The stern, yeah, you're right. I'm forgetting all my nautical knowledge here for this. What's important for this?
I'm trying to imagine what. So is this is like a more modern seeming battleship? Is that the idea? Or is this more like a tricked out pirate ship?
They've jumped from the battleship to a smaller ship, the Royal Dragon.
Are these Age of Sail ships, or are these?
These are more like Age of Sail ships. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm trying to think now of. You know, there's the prow, there's the stern. The helm is sort of where it's steered from, right? It's not necessarily... Yeah. Usually it's more like towards the back of the ship, I guess.
That's... we've got somebody steering at the helm. And so Connor, first thing he does is try to shoot someone with a shotgun and gets a nat one. And I said, dangy mangy. Connor moves up and summons a spirit weapon at level 2, swinging on the same target. Connor lets off a shot into the air before summoning the shovel of Paylor. With a 14, he manages to hit. These Agalloch recruits only wear leather armor. However, minimum damage, 4 damage from a shotgun. From a spirit weapon. Golden shovel clocks guy across the head. From the helm, one of the enemy recruits blows a dart Connor's way, but it's a nat one. The movement of the ship throws the helmsman off balance. Meanwhile, the rest of the enemy crew engages Hex and Connor with scimitars, 2 against Connor and 3 against Hex. Connor manages to duck the first swing entirely, but the second scimitar manages to slash across his face. Lucky for the displacement cloak, otherwise it would have been a slash to the throat. Connor takes 9 slashing damage. Hex manages to dodge 2 swings before the last one cuts into his shoulder for 7 slashing damage, which is not resisted yet because he's not raging yet. And then it's Hex's turn. Hex turns and blasts a soldier at close range and hits him in the left shoulder. He gets him with a second shot, which is a headshot, taking one of the recruits down. He then turns to the next recruit, hits him with a shot that grazes the recruit's face as he turns away his head away from the muzzle flash. And then Hex goes for the bite, and the sailor tries to hold him back, but he just manages to get his jaws in. Hex rips away a chunk of muscle from the recruit's left arm with his teeth, and then Gent is up. For their first round, Jen aims their bow at the guys who are one of the guys who's attacking Connor. He gets him directly in the back, and the target tumbles overboard dead. These guys are not don't have a ton of health on them. Jen switches to one of the targets that's fighting Hex, And finishes their first turn, but then for their second turn, pulls out their life-stealing rapier and come partway down the raised portion of the deck, hit the guy that's attacking Hex. The tip of the vile rapier from Citra Akra seeks its way directly to the vein in the recruit's left wrist, draining him dry.
Wow. That's precise.
Yeah, it's the vile rapier. It's the one that the blade, it's like a rapier with the blade is like a twitching proboscis that seeks the heart of its enemy.
Ugh, draining it's damage. Like a, it's like a mosquito proboscis. Gross.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gent vile rapier from Citra Akra. Connor shoots the shotgun again at his remaining assailant, hits him in center mass for 18 damage. The recruit reels in pain from the gut shot. Follow up with the shovel, hits him for 8 damage, clonks him over the head, leaving him dizzy and in agony. The helmsman desperately turns and blows another dart at Connor. The dart barely leaves the blowgun. The wounded recruit in his close quarters with Connor swings, but Connor sidesteps the strike. Finally, the recruit engaging Hex manages to deliver a cut to Hex's right shoulder for 4 slashing, leaving only a shallow cut. Hex blasts the guy he's currently engaging with shock with his laser, manages to shoot off the attacker's ear. Hex then fires a shot in the assailant's left foot, and then Hex shoots the target in the chest, ending him as blood streams from the right side of his head. Hex charges up the deck and bites at the helmsman. Hex chomps into the helmsman's ribs, and then it's Gent's turn. The only remaining foes are the ones near Connor and the one at the helm. So Hex uses their bow to shoot at the one near Connor. A classic heart-seeking shot from Shadow Song obliterates the enemy, and the second target falls overboard dead. They move up to closer to Hex and his victim and end their turn. Connor moves up and attacks the helmsman with the shotgun. However, we then realized some sort of error that had been going on behind the scenes, because Connor executes the helmsman with the shotgun, but then I say, just to make sure, Connor isn't using a shield with a combat shotgun, is he? And Alex says, damn it, he is. Sorry. And I say, okay, let's clear this up now, because this has happened before. He can only use the sawed-off shotgun in combination with the shield. The sawed-off only has 2 shots and a range of 10 feet or 30 feet at long range, but it does 2d10 instead of 2d8. This is instead of the combat shotgun, which has many more shots and a different range, 30-90, but does 2d8 damage instead. The thing is, you can't hold a Dangus like Riot Shield and a Dangus Kel-Tec at the same time. You got to use 2 hands for the Kel-Tec, so instead you do it Doom style with the double barrel shotgun and the shield in the one hand. Boom! Ch-ch-ch. So, having fixed Connor's stat line, they seize control of the Royal Dragon, but it is a small, fragile, unarmed vessel. It'll be able to make boarding or even ramming actions against enemy ships, but someone will need to pilot the vessel. Similarly to their last op, they'll be receiving their bonuses for objectives as they complete them, so that I don't have to keep track of all of them over the course of the operation. So they get plus 50 gold for taking the Royal Dragon, bringing Gent's total to 21,154 gold. They all get 150 XP. Gent says, I vote we use this boat to crash into another. Just wreck them all. And Hex says, sounds good to me. In terms of pilot, Connor is still concentrating on enhanced ability, so Hex might be our best shot still. And I say, sounds good. I say, actually, the last enhanced ability cast was Eagle Splendor on Gent. And he says, oh, okay. I suppose Connor will have to stand next to Hex as he pilots, channeling Paylor's guidance into him. And I say, you'll need to choose a target from the remaining 5 hostile ships on the water. Then you'll need to make another intelligence check. Connor rides shotgun, and although Connor... Chantel accidentally raids. Connor rides shitgun. Shot. Alex says, pfft, lol. And she says, damn it.
You definitely want to use a shield when you're wielding a shit gun.
To recap, the nearby ships are the Black Justice, the Divine Revenge, the Lord's Fortress, the Iron Dawn, and the Bloody Fury. So, the Black Justice, Divine Revenge, and Lord's Fortress are medium and have limited ammunition, whereas the Iron Dawn and the Bloody Fury are big and well-armed. Gent votes that they only step up one upgrade, and Hex wheels the boat around and takes aim at the Black Justice. The Black Justice is twice as big and twice as sturdy as the Royal Dragon, as are the other mid-tier ships of the enemy fleet. Despite its size, only two crewmen man the vessel, and the one at the ship's ballista is down to his last shot. Both crewmen wield sabers and wear leather armor. They also carry blow darts like those on the Royal Dragon. Gent takes the opportunity while Hex is lining up the ramming maneuver to investigate the ship that they are on, just to double check. And they do an investigate roll, saying that it occurs to them that they may be sinking treasure. And Gent gets a 19 to search the boat, while Hex prepares to ram the enemy vessel, the Black Justice attempts to counter maneuver in order to move into position for a broadside shot. Luckily, Hex outmaneuvers the enemy ship, catching it with a perfect ramming strike. Meanwhile, Gent goes below decks to search through crates of ship equipment like rope and harnesses and whatever else you find on the ship. Gent finds a stash of 150 gold pieces hidden in a box at the bottom of a crate full of darts. Unfortunately, as they grip the box of gold pieces, the Royal Dragon collides with the Black Justice, wrecking the hulls of both ships almost immediately. "Time to go," Hex shouts from the deck. Gent emerges from below with bunches and bunches of rope scattered on them, and says, "We should probably jump over to the next deck and make sure these two go under." They gain another 50 gold for sinking the Black Justice. As the two ships sink beneath them, the Draelic fleet fires on the Divine Revenge, sinking it with a single shot. Hex says, "Time to jetpack insert onto the Lord's Fortress." Gent says, "Sounds good." The Lord's Fortress is a mid-sized ship in the enemy fleet with a crew of 8. The crewmen are equipped similarly to those who were fought on the Royal Dragon. Looking at the ballista, they can see that it only has 3 shots remaining, one of which has been loaded and 2 more are in a barrel next to it. So, Gent gets to the top of one of the sets of steps going to one of the upper decks of the ship. Hex makes a performance check, and with an 18, Hex sees that their work in sinking the last two ships has been noticed by their comrades as Draelic soldiers cheer from the decks of their vessels. This grants Hex advantage on their next roll. And this is the little thing from the original module I took this from, Blood Above, Blood Below, which is set in a Colosseum setting. And so in that circumstance, you roll performance checks to represent like winning over the crowd, basically. But it works the same way, where it gives you advantage if you win over the crowd on your side. So, Connor goes up first and pulls out his +2 vicious javelin of jabbing and tackles the ballista gunner. Connor gets him in his butt. The unprepared gunner howls in pain.
Just runs up behind him and stabs him in the ass?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I roll for the target anyway. His spirit weapon from the last fight is 3 rounds of movement away. Might get a few rounds of action on the ship. Gent is up. Notices that the ballista gunner is now adjacent to an ally. So they aim their bow at him. Take aim. They fire. They shoot him right through the heart. I say, "Shot through the heart!" I don't say you're to blame, but it's implied. Hex is up. Hex charges down the stairs from the forecastle, or the forecastle. And because he says it with all the he spells it Foxel, FOCCSLE, which I'm pretty sure is how you pronounce that word that's written like forecastle or whatever.
Foxel.
Hex charges down the stairs from the forecastle and blasts at the deckhand nearest to him. A direct shot to the recruit's sternum. Their next shot is a groin shot. And finally, the recruit reels against the side of the deck. For a third shot, he falls overboard. Hex then rages, ending his turn. The crew of the Lord's Fortress rushes to engage the frenzying lizardman on their deck, while the one aiming the ballista is forced to contend with Connor. The ones closest to the helm fire blow darts at Hex, as do the couple of recruits that can't quite close the distance. The Cloak of Displacement saves Connor from a cut across his right hand. Meanwhile, the recruit swinging at Hex misses in melee, but a dart manages to hit Hex in the chest for 7 piercing after reduction. The rest of the darts bounce harmlessly off of Hex. Gent Part 2 fires on the ballista guy again, gets 40 damage. Gent successfully assassinates the remaining ballista crew. Connor is up. Gent makes a performance check and gets an unnatural 20. They spot some of the Draelic soldiers on the deck of the Slayer nearby, cheering them on as they take out the remaining ballista crew on the Lord's Fortress. So their next shot has advantage. Connor hurls a guiding bolt at the helmsman. He leans to the side, keeping his grip on the helm, and the bolt goes over his shoulder. Connor moves up to engage another recruit and moves the shovel towards the ship. Gent attacks one of the enemies attacking Hex with their life-stealing rapier and skewer the recruit right through the arm. They fall to the ground dead. Gent gets to roll performance again and gets a dirty 20. Hex moves down the deck and blasts the recruit guarding the stairs to the poop deck. The cheers of their comrades are still audible from the allied vessel nearby. Moreover, it seems the battle on the shore is going well, as the defenders on the shoreline are currently pinned down in a shooting fight with the undercover MPOC agents that attack them. Hex gets a nat 20 for a headshot, does 36 damage, calls it pathetic, but he blows the recruit's head off. Hex spins around and shoots at the closest recruit, doing 15 damage, gets him in the right side of his back. The second shot to his back throws him onto his hands and knees, but he gets back up. A dart flies past Hexaquila, but it distracts him just long enough for the heavily injured recruit he just shot to race forward and cut him across the chest. Connor is once again saved by his displacement cloak. Connor swings his javelin but gets a nat 1. We end up like reanalyzing Connor's sheet again, basically questioning the issue of what type of shield he's using and things like this.
Connor, come on.
Well, the trick is that Connor changed hands between players, right? It was originally played by our friend Graham, but then Alex took over when Graham left the game. Yeah, that's right.
So he didn't have the built-in knowledge of having made the character from the ground up.
Yeah, and so this is the thing, is that at this point, I literally say, honestly, I think you need to rebuild Connor from the ground up just to get his inventory sorted. So we switch over to Gent's turn. Gent runs over to the closest enemy and attacks with advantage. They race forward and impale the recruit harassing Connor. They skewer his left elbow. The crewman gasps, gripping at his arm as he falls to the deck dead. Hex is up. Hex shoots the guy engaging him. Hex blasts the weak recruit back with barely a thought, slaying him. Hex then blasts the helmsman twice. Hex heads for the helm, gunning down the helmsman as he moves. The spirit shovel arrives just as the combat ends. Suddenly, a direct hit strikes the side of the Lord's Fortress, and a great plume of smoke tells them that the ship's hull is burning. For seizing the ship, they each gain 50 gold. Hex rolls performance, and the Lord's Fortress is going down rapidly. We need to keep moving. Hex looks around for the next closest ship. Only the largest ships, the Iron Dawn and the Bloody Fury, are still afloat nearby. Jet begins playing Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. Hex says, Bloody Fury it is, let's go, and activates his jetpack. As they activate their jetpacks and jump to the Bloody Fury, despite being one of the two largest ships in the fleet, the Bloody Fury has less space on deck. More of the vessel is dedicated to being a hulking armored beast than it is devoted to the operations of the crew. Four enemy soldiers stand on deck, all in leather armor and carrying both blow darts and sabers. The ship's heavy ballista has four shots remaining, one which has been loaded and three more in a barrel next to it. And that was where we broke for that session.
Wow. Crazy ship, but not like ship-based, but not on a ship combat.
Yeah, ship-to-ship combat, but jumping from ship to ship.
I'm realizing now I'm a little disappointed that the guy who got stabbed in the butt wasn't stabbed in the butt while standing on the poop deck.
He might have been.
Stabbed in the pooper while standing on the poop deck.
Yeah. Yeah, and the battle just continues in the next session, honestly. I could probably do that. Do we want to talk about Gozer a bit, though?
Yeah, how about we sort of get started in our dive into Gozer. Maybe we could start rolling some dice. I don't know. Let's figure this out. But first, before we move on, I did want to say something that I was reminded of while you were describing that battle is, did you see Black Panther Wakanda Forever?
I did not.
So I wouldn't say it's an amazing movie. It was fine. But there is a particular standout scene where I guess they're Atlanteans. I think they must be Atlanteans. Attack a Wakandan battleship, and the Atlanteans are like shooting up out of the water and landing on the ship, and there's hand-to-hand combat on top of the ship, but also people like flying around fighting. I was really reminded of that scene when you were describing this battle. But I guess yours probably predates Wakanda Forever. I can't keep my time straight on that one.
Oh yeah, I mean, this was back in 2021.
Yeah, when was Wakanda Forever, though? I think it might have been around 2021. Anyway.
This was July 2021.
Very similar sort of vibes that I was getting from that scene. It was a cool scene in the movie. Yeah, you should check at least that part out. But yeah, let's talk about Gozer. And right off the top, like, we've already given the overview, but here's a bit more about it. It's by James V. West. And something I didn't know about Gozer is that it was really taking shape. Like, James West started writing it in April of 2020. And I know this because when I was Googling around for how to play Gozer, just to see, like, there are some actual plays out there. Maybe on a future episode, I'll reference them. Like, there is stuff about Gozer online. But in doing my searching, I found James V. West's blog at Doom's Lakers, not Doomstalkers, Doom's Lakers, Doomslakers maybe, .blogspot.com. And he's got an entry here. Saturday, April 11th, 2020. What am I doing? We are in a global pandemic. It's entirely possible Americans will reelect a psycho reality show clown as president, and I turn 50 this year if I live long enough. It's mass fucking chaos everywhere. Not cool, universe. Fuck off. So in the midst of all this mess, what exactly have I been doing? What started out as a serious attempt to finally write my sand and sorcery game Dead Wizards, which changed to Sand in the Bone, morphed into a completely different game idea about a month ago. It is called Gozer. It is based on the same game system as Sand in the Bone, but is entirely different in tone. Where Sand strikes a more serious tone, Gozer is balls-out sci-fantasy in the vein of early 80s romps like Heavy Metal and Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. It is an entirely visual game, too, meaning I'm hand-lettering the whole fucking thing, and it's taking forever, but I'm loving it. Something about doing hand lettering is relaxing and fulfilling to me. I don't purport to be great at it. I'm not a master letterer, but I have fun with it and I'm practicing the craft. Anyway, he's got a few blog posts just talking about the development of Gozer, and I thought this was just a really cool little, you know, bit of insight into the mind of the artist. It's neat to see where this all began. He's got, like, sample art, and then he's got, like, screenshots from Heavy Metal and screenshots from Wizards as sources of inspiration. And it's just really neat to then compare it to the final product. And, you know, it was so long ago that we touched upon Gozer that I can't remember what we said, so I'll probably be repeating a lot of stuff here. But you can buy Gozer at DriveThruRPG or where I got it, which is off of itch.io. And so a note, you know, I read that part because he says this bit about how it's like so visually arresting and he's doing all the art and the lettering by hand. And now that I actually have the source book in front of me to look through it, like, wow, he really went for it. As I was just like browsing through the PDF of the source book and remarking on how much I love the art, the style on the cover of all these goons, these goozes. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Korgoth of Barbaria, you know, which,
yeah,
Jendi Tartakovsky's unsold pilot. But unlike, you know, Tartakovsky has a style that you see in like Samurai Jack and Primal, where it's very angular, like square chins are literally like squared off. But what with Korgoth, it has a more like sketchy, rounded, and I will say like kind of ugly look. Like all the people are really kind of
pimply.
Yeah, exactly. Just like really, really ugly, but in a way that I love. I guess Wizards, the movie Wizards, is a really good touch point because it's got a lot of that in there too. And then every page, like, I guess I'm saying this up front, like, I don't mean this as an insult to James West, but like, this is like the scrawlings of a madman. It starts off, you've got your little introduction, which I'll read a blurb of it in a bit. And then page one is a character sheet. And then page two, which is what we'll focus on this episode, is create your goos. And it's like a flow chart for creating your character. And when I first looked at this, you've got it probably in front of you, right? You know what I'm talking about here?
Yep.
When I first looked at this, I was like, oh, this is like the short form thing. Like, this is like the reference page that condenses all the rules for character creation that'll be detailed in this book. So when, you know, after you read all the rules, you go back to this reference page and it's just sort of like an easy step by step. Uh-uh. This is it. This is the character creation page. And it goes on for a few more pages with like multiple tables and stuff. And all of the writing and art is like jammed in as close as possible. And like there are doodles in the margins. Like it is a sight to behold. Taking it as a whole, looking at the whole page, like I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, like how am I going to be able to get through this? But credit to Mr. West. When you look close, you know, each step is numbered. There are a lot of little like flowchart arrows pointing you to different info. And I was actually pretty quickly able to pick up how it goes and like what to do to create your character. So, you know, to quote the bard, there is method in this madness. I haven't read the entire book because I do feel one thing I will say is that not laying it out like a traditional book, though, I find it takes like more out of me to read. Do you find that?
Yeah, I could see how this would be difficult to run, given, you know, how you would have to flip through all of this madness.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, it's like the novel House of Leaves, where, you know, when you read House of Leaves and you get deep into it, sometimes there are like pages that you have to read in a mirror. Or sometimes, like, you know, they're every which way and the letters are like forming almost like ASCII shapes on the page and stuff. Like, it's really neat, but it definitely takes more concentration and focus to like really read this. You can't, I don't think you can speed read Gozer, I guess is the point that I'm trying to make. But that said, it is also on a visual level, like really cool to look at. It almost feels like somebody etched an RPG into like an elementary school desktop. You know what I mean? Like, it's just everything is crammed in there almost like graffiti. Every inch of space has something in it. So it's a really and the whole book is like that. All 54 pages of this are like that. I can only imagine how much time it took to put this together. And as a product, it's really cool.
There's a talent you can get called Slayer, and it's written in the Slayer font.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are references in here and just so much cool art, really good hand lettering. I can't yet speak to how good the game itself is, but I can already attest to this just being a way cool product to look at. On the intro page, in a second, I'm just going to read like the little setup blurb here. But then at the bottom, it talks about inspirations. Heavy metal, the Black Hack, Morkborg. It all comes back to Morkborg. And my thoughts, like my reaction to diving into the Gozer sourcebook was similar to your reaction when we were talking about Morkborg, which is another one that we've like touched on, but we haven't done a deep dive into it. And I believe I'm going to try to paraphrase, but I believe your thoughts on Morkborg were similar to what I just said, where it's like, this is really cool to look at, but like, is the game any good? Is it all in service of a good game, or is it just something that's really fun to flip through, right? I think you said,
yeah, I don't
said
know. There's something
along,
about,
like, along those lines.
There's something about Gozer, though, that it, like, it's a lot more colorful and makes, like, it makes me want to interact with it more than Morkborg does.
It reminds me a lot, actually, of Savage Worlds Lowlife. That was the...
Yes, the, that is a good...
The exact that, atmosphere I was getting from it.
That's also kind of the vibe we were on when we found this game originally, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So let me just read this little intro blurb about like what's going on in the game world. This is some setup here. Angry sky bleeds upon a fallen world. Sky worms hunt meat. Fallen towers radiate fading spells. Pretty ones rot in the dirt lost. The goos rise. This is an adventure role-playing game in which you play weirdos called goos. And that's G-O-O-Z. So you're not goo, you are goos. In a broken future world, the long dead pretty people left ruins to explore where you may steal great riches or discover ways to save the earth, whichever comes first. To play, you need 2 to 6 players and dice. One player, the Goose Master, orchestrates the world with its many weird monsters, electric wizards, and sinister robots. And then there's like a little blurb within a blurb here, a drawing of a naked Goose covering his junk and saying, hey, you mind? A million years ago, goos were born. You were ugly, low, less than scum, riffraff, suboptimal pests, dirty, dinky degenerates. Yet the angry earth cast off the pretties while sparing goos to live. Why? And a central thrust of the game seems to be, and this is reflected in James West's blog post as well, that like, the world is coming to an end, and the only beings left on it who could possibly save it, I guess they are the vestiges of humanity, though it's never really outright stated, are these ugly goos, these ugly little, I don't know what they are, mutants, goblin-y creatures. But saving the world seems to be like this background objective. It seems to have like this global objective to it that runs in the background. And I guess there it's sort of optional whether or not you explore that path, because of course the intro here says you may steal great riches, right? Like it could just be a looting game, but it seems like It's also a world-saving game, which I find pretty interesting. Seems like a big scale for something like this. Do we want to continue with this end of stuff, or do we want more Coyote's Aegis before we actually try some character creation?
Let's jump into character creation. I feel like doing it.
All right. So you've got like your character sheet there, but a lot of this is going to be rolling and choosing stuff. And on that page I was talking about, the Create Your Goose flowchart, there's even a little legend here that shows you each step in the process has like a little icon. So some of them are you either assign or roll the numbers. Some of them are you choose or roll the numbers. Some of them are just optional, and some of them are optional that offer a high risk or reward. So like there are these different like categories that the different steps fall into. So the way this works, you have different attributes, which in this are called action classes or AC. The three ones are cunning, magic, and prowess, and those encompass the sort of smaller aspects. Like cunning encompasses stealth, charisma, deception, and thievery. Magic includes knowledge and arcane aptitude, and prowess encompasses fight, run, jump, action, and athletics. So those are sort of the things that those three action classes, the attributes of this game, represent. And so step one is you assign this array of numbers to the three action classes. So you have three numbers, you assign each of these numbers to each of the action classes however you like. A lower number is better because when you are using the attribute, you roll a d20 and you basically want to meet or get above that number. So a lower number is better because you're more likely to get above it. The three numbers are 8, 10, and 14. So Tom, assign 8, 10, and 14 to your cunning, magic, and prowess. And don't worry about a name yet, because a name is also part of the character generation. There's a table we can roll on.
Cunning, prowess, and magic in that order.
Okay, so 8 cunning, 10 prowess, 14 magic.
Uh-huh.
Next step is hit points. How much damage can you take? You just roll a d6 on this table, and it'll tell you.
Let's find out.
And of course,
I got a 6.
You got a
big
6.
Health.
20 HP, the highest possible starting HP. And as with most games, if you reach 0 HP, death or debasement. I don't know what debasement pertains to yet, but zero is when
I've seen some of the options. Debasement. Knockdown, out, suffering, permanent damages. You got a nasty scar. Ravaged, you gain +1 magic AC. Bruised, you gain +1 prowess AC. Rattled, you gain +1 cunning AC. Squished innards, you lose 1d6 HP. Or cursed, -1 goose. Describe your debasement.
And it should be noted that Goose, in addition to Goose being the name of like the race of your character, Goose is a pool of points that you can use to like add bonuses to rolls and actions and things like that.
There's a scar table to roll on if you get debased, if you get the nasty scar, bruised or squashed innards. And then under debasement, there's a skull that says, I choose death. And it says, noble choice, make a new goose, pick a boon. And there's a 1d6 on the new boon your new goose gets.
It's interesting stuff. And like, it really is based around all of these little things that you roll on. So like, for example, next after HP is your defense. Defense is subtracted from damage when you take a hit. Armor is added to defense. And before I get you to roll on the table, there's a little illustration here. Tough bastard, huh? No matter. If hit, you take 1 HP damage minimum. So this is another one of those games where if you get hit, no matter what happens, even if you have great defense, you're still going to take at least 1 HP. So roll a d6 to determine your armor, which will determine your defense.
I got a 2.
So you have no armor, but that lets you roll twice on the weapons table that's coming up.
I still get to roll for a helmet, right?
Sure.
No helmet.
No helmet, so you got no armor, you got no helmet, but you have two weapons. Then the next section says you have 5 points of goose. That goose pool that starts you off is just automatically 5, and as we get further into it, you will see the ways you can spend goose to, as it notes here, do amazing shit. Now it's time to determine your weapon, and Tom, you get to roll twice on this table. It's a D10 this time.
Hell yeah. Big weapon time. Four and one.
So you have a Falks and a Dirk.
Huh.
So the Falks does 2d4 and the Dirk does 1d4 plus 1. What is a Falks, Tom? I don't know what this is. What is this?
It's a crazy, like, I think of them normally as two-handed swords, but I don't know if maybe there's a one-handed version.
Yeah, it looks like. In fact, the first image that comes up when I search for Falks is a guy wielding two of them, one that's large and one that's small. So I guess that is your character. Can be used to mean any number of tools that have a curved blade, sharp on the inside edge like a sickle. So it's sort of like a hook, almost like a hook, but not like a super curved hook. But the blade is on the inside, the inner curve of the metal rather than the outer curve. So a Falks and a Dirk. Next, we got to determine some money, and it's a D6. There is a currency system here. Simply clinks to tossers. I guess the easiest way to think about this would be quarters and dollars, because it's 4 clinks equals 1 tosser.
All right, start money. 1d6?
Yep.
2. I got 1d6 tossers.
Yeah.
6 tossers. Hell yeah.
Nice. You got 24 clinks to your name. And then this is a fun one. We got a roll to see what color your blood is. It's another D6.
Color only matters in evil magic. I got a 5.
You got orange blood. And now we got to do your hair.
Oh, yeah. We've got a bunch of optional ones around us here, too. We've got skin, hair, eye color, pronouns, lucky symbol. But yeah, let's do hair. Hair is D20. Good chance of being bald. 14.
14.
Flowing.
You got flowing hair. And
flowing mane.
It looks like the next couple are just sort of like less cosmetic and more actually pertaining to your character. But do you want to do a few of these other sort of cosmetic options that we have here, like your skin or your hair, your eyes?
Yeah, sure.
It looks like skin, hair, and eyes is like 3 rolls on the same table.
Yeah, all D12. So skin, 10.
Maroon skin with orange blood.
Hair is 9.
You got long, flowing gold hair.
And 8 for eyes.
And eggshell-colored eyes.
Oh, geez. Pure white eyes, flowing gold hair.
Maroon skin and orange
blood.
Maroon
skin that bleeds orange. I love this. I love how colorful it is.
You want to choose pronouns? Or you can roll. There's a D4.
Let's get a lucky symbol first.
Okay.
My lucky symbol, it's the skull.
Nice.
3 for skull.
Rattle your symbol to get lucky on one roll a day.
My pronouns are they, them. There you go.
Right on. And I guess...
That brings us to our talent.
Yeah, I guess talent is the last one that you have to choose, and then... Or the last one on this page, anyway, that you have to choose. And then there are a couple of optional ones. So your talent, roll a d20. I hope you're a cutie.
No, I'm strong.
Strong, hell yeah. Strong, dual wielding, with no armor.
Rawr.
So, step 10 here, this is optional, but let's just do all of them. So, what is your need? What was your last deed? Tell it like it is.
I don't know. My goal is to be the hero of a great story that is told among the Goos.
Ah, ambitions of being a legendary hero.
And my last deed was that I decapitated a pirate.
I think that's pretty good. And then here's a simple yes-no question. Are you a wizard?
No.
No. So go to page 12 and level up. But we won't skip to page 12 yet. Maybe we should hop back to Coyote's Aegis before I talk about the next page. Every one of these pages is just, like, so jam-packed with stuff. Like, on page 3, the next page, man, we got to choose what our ears look like.
Yeah.
Backgrounds. Possessions.
I mean, we don't have that many left. I'm down to finish it.
Oh, but I guess. And then it goes even deeper too. On page 4, is it like a deep dive into your talents? So yeah, all right. Let's do these last few steps on page 3. Your background. So, what was your job? And you roll a d66, which I guess is you roll 2d6, but you treat them like percentiles.
Yes. Interesting. So 2d6?
Yeah, with one representing tens, the other
26.
One. 26, you were a leather master?
A leather master.
And you decide what that job means.
You're implying that I'm some kind of leather daddy?
You could be. But it literally says you decide what the job means at the bottom of that chart.
Oh, yeah, good call. D20 for my clothes.
Yeah.
What am I wearing?
Please get a 12.
I got a 13.
Oh, so
tattered
close.
Tattered tunic. Very close, yeah.
12 is the thong.
Yeah.
And then other possessions. This is 2d8. You roll it 3 times for 3 items.
Oh.
Once again, it's a d88. So once again, we're doing it like percentiles.
So 62?
62 is a ship in a bottle.
Ooh. Got that from that pirate I decapitated. 14?
14 is a meteorite.
And 24.
24.
Heroic figurine.
Yeah, heroic figurine. This must be, this is like your inspiration. Maybe you wanted to be like a hero of legend. And so you're like, well, this is the figurine.
Found an action figure.
Yeah, this is the action figure. This is what I want to be. And what's the first thing I should do? Well, I also found the ship in a bottle. I guess the first thing I got to do is kill a pirate.
And now we roll 2d8 for my name.
That's right.
22.
22, you are Plutar.
Plutar. And my ears.
The leather master Goose, who's real strong.
Ears.
Your ears are a d12.
My ears are pointies.
You got pointies. You got little maroon pointies. And then, last thing on this page, for non-wizards only, do you know a vulgar spell? So roll a d6.
I got a 1, so no, and I can never learn
you
it.
Don't, there's no chance of any...
This makes sense, because I'm strong. I have the strong talent. I don't have to be a wizard.
Yeah, exactly. And
let's roll for my muscles under strong.
And so that's like the starting points for character creation. We've filled up a bunch of the cosmetic stuff. We've assigned your action classes, your background, your needs, your deeds, your talent, your armor, your weapons, your gear, your hit points, and like most of the stuff that's on this character sheet. And What comes next is taking a closer look at, well, actually, you know what? As I flip through this, the next section is just taking a closer look at talents. We've already decided your talent, so let's read a bit about this, and then after that page, things start going towards general rules of gameplay and stuff like that, which I think I'll probably end up covering next episode. So just to take a closer look at the talents, on page 5 is strong.
Yeah, and I already rolled for it.
Roll for muscles. Bonus applies to melee damage.
I got a 3, so all I get is a plus 1.
Plus 1 to melee damage. And, yeah, the options are a plus 1, a plus 2. A plus 1 each time you get hit, you lose a plus 1 each round thereafter. Or if you rolled a 6, you're a Herkuguzian with a plus 3 bonus. You're just a...
Yeah, it would have been cool to be Herkuguzian.
You're just a good old plus 1 leather master in a tunic.
Yeah. Yeah, a tattered tunic with a couple of sharp things to cut with.
So, Tom, what do you think of this character creation process? I kind of appreciate that it is, like, just 2 pages of little charts. It's a lot faster than a lot of source books.
I like it. I feel like certain tables could be bigger, like the hair table.
Do you mean bigger as in more options, or do you mean physically bigger on this crowded page?
More options.
Okay.
And I don't know how I feel. Like, I guess it's cool for like a one, like if I wasn't gonna play this seriously, if I was just gonna play this like to try it out, I probably play it as is. But if I was gonna like run this game like for a regular group, I probably would not have people roll to see how much health they had. I would probably give everyone a flat health mm-hmm, bonus mm-hmm. rather than it being random.
Yeah, you know what? Having gone through this chart, what sticks out to me about doing character creation this way is I almost feel like this form of character creation would be better served in a solo RPG like Notorious. Because it's all,
maybe
it's all, you know, so much of it is randomly generated. Obviously, you can like choose from these charts as well. Like you can just, the hit points table is assigned or rolled. So theoretically, you can just choose however many hit points you want. But because of the random elements of that, it almost feels like part of the fun is just like you roll a character and you're just sort of stuck with whatever you get, which is definitely more suited to either, like you said, like something short, like a one shot, or something like a solo journaling RPG, where part of the fun is just generating stuff randomly because, you know, that's like the game computer that you, the person, are playing with. But I don't know. We haven't played Gozer yet. Maybe this will all come together in a really surprising and interesting way. And now that we've gone through character creation, I'm less daunted by the busy nature, the busy design at work here. Like we figured it out. We got through it without any issue. Even though it really is like, this is a real jumble of art and text, but it's discernible. It's not illegible.
Yeah. But this is a complaint that I make like fairly often about various RPG products. You gotta put bookmarks in the RPG.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, the PDF does not have any bookmarks. Thankfully,
I say this as someone who put out an RPG that does not have bookmarks, but I will say that if you click on the different pages in the table of contents on Ceremony and Shadow, it will bring you to those pages. Not so for the table of contents on Gozer.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
You can click on it and it just highlights the page.
And I almost think that it's more important with something like Gozer because like the titles of the sections kind of blend in to all of the other stuff that's on the page. It's not like laid out with a splash page for each chapter or anything like that. But it is pretty cool. I'm scrolling through. Now I'm looking at this weird weapons table. That's pretty fun. There's a lot going on here.
Here's a fun little note. I'm on the page for Goozer City, the last beacon of civilization, first bastion of Goo's ascendancy, a real shithole. And they have a table here for vertical mobility. And there's a note that says, pretty ones didn't care about accessibility, but Goo's do. So ramps have been added to 75% of actively used buildings.
Wow. It's very progressive of the Goo's. I like to imagine because members of the Goo's species seem to be rather randomly assembled, there's probably a lot of them that don't have legs or maybe have a pseudopod of some kind.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing, honestly.
Gotta have more ramps. And there is a table for everything, because you know you're looking at vertical mobility and stairs are an option. And then at the bottom, what kind of stairs? Roll d4, spiral, meandering, switchback, or straight.
Page 26 of the PDF is a beautiful map. That's great.
This level of randomness really does suggest like a solo RPG to me. I bet this would work just fine as a solo RPG if you really wanted, because there are even like encounter tables. And I mean, we were just talking about, you know, Goozer City, like just roll up your whole city. You don't even have to come up with anything from scratch. It's all right here. Goozer City, you find yourself on Loopy Avenue. And around you are some colorful columns, and one of them has a spiral staircase wrapping around it. There's a vendor nearby. He's selling flatbread with bitter cheese. And as you walk down the avenue, you pass some apartments. You pass in front of a brothel and encounter a group of prostitutes. These are all options on the tables that I'm picking from.
To the game's credit, there is a handy index at the back of the book, but it, again,
we need those hyperlinks.
Exactly.
I'll admit, Tom, I'm liking this more and more the more I read through it.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, it's just like, I don't know if it's just the color, but it jumps out at me more than Mork Borg does.
Well, and it's less, like it's stylized, but I found like Mork Borg really felt like, I don't know, somehow more focused on the art. This one is like just trying to cram as much stuff into each page as possible while still making it really visually fun to explore. But you know, we haven't done our deep dive into Mork Borg. It's coming someday.
Ooh.
Goos.
Maybe if I make a Malagas character for Mork Borg, I'll be interested.
Ah, okay. I can see that working. We do have to get to Mork Borg at some point, though, because between Gozer and Malagas, it's clearly a major source of inspiration for a lot of games. Certainly a lot of games that you can get off of itch.io.
So are we going back to Coyote's Aegis and then wrapping things up?
Sounds good to me.
So, the Bloody Fury and the Iron Dawn are both the two largest ships in the enemy fleet, and the only ones still afloat in the group's immediate area. They head for the deck of the Bloody Fury. The design of these last two vessels is more like that of an ironclad, reducing deck space in favor of slanted armor plating. Three defenders on the Bloody Fury man the ship's heavy ballista, while a fourth takes the helm. So, they use their jetpacks to land on the deck. Connor is up first and throws a guiding bolt at the helmsman. The bolt slams into the helmsman's lower back, casting him forward over the helm. Connor moves towards the ballista, and then it is Gent, who is closer to the helm, and aims for the helmsman. He currently grants advantage due to the guiding bolt he just got hit with. He's sprawled over the helm on his belly. Gent, with sneak attack, only does 10 piercing and 18 sneak attack, which, considering she has 10d6 sneak attack, is like nothing. He rights himself as the bolt hits, catching it in the buttocks rather than the intended kill shot.
Oh man, everybody getting it in the butt.
All the helmsmen getting in the butt. The defenders take up defensive positions and draw their blow darts. The ones at the ballista open fire on Connor as he proceeds up to their level. Three darts fly over the deck past Connor. The helmsman launches one at Hex, but it lands on the deck at Hex's foot. Hex starts by shooting the helmsman. Blast the helmsman overboard. Hex then follows Connor up the deck and gets just below the ballista. Starts firing up over the rails at the defenders adjacent to him. Gets him in the left knee, then the right knee. Gent switches to target the enemies who are manning the ballista and slips a bolt over the railing into one of the defenders' chests. He falls over the railing to the north of Hex, dead. As the previous defender is slain, two new enemies emerge from below decks wielding dart guns. One quickly swaps to a short sword when he turns to see Hex immediately adjacent him, while the other immediately begins shooting at Connor on the stairs. The scout attacking Hex is too caught off guard to attack effectively. His blows easily turn to grazing strikes by Hex's agility. Connor manages to catch the dart on his shield, but the next one catches him in the unarmored spot between the neck and chest piece, dispelling the cloak of displacement for one round. Connor takes 11 piercing damage, and then it is his turn. Connor continues up the stairs to the ballista and jabs with the javelin. Gets one of the targets close to the ballista. Connor slips the javelin under the ballista and gets the defender in the right leg. A deep hit. Gent is up, and two new opponents have joined the combat. One of them is immediately adjacent to Hex, so Gent aims for that one. They just hit, pin their shoulder to the door they just came through, and they pin a corpse to the door because the damage kills them. The defenders by the ballista move to engage Connor with their sabers. Each one aids the other in their synchronized assault. The first strike cuts into Connor's right arm for 17 slashing. Another strike across Connor's right knee for 10 slashing. Connor manages to duck one more blow, but the last one just manages to cut into his right shoulder for 6 slashing. And Hex blasts the other guy who came up from below decks with a nat 1, then a 30 to hit. The first shot goes over his head, but the next one gets him in the left foot. The next one gets him in the right thigh, and then he sinks his teeth into the guy's right shoulder, and he falls dead. Connor is up and jabs again. Connor thrusts down into the defender's left knee. The dude's leg is quite messed up. Unless there's anything left for Connor, it goes over to the Gent, so we go to Gent. Remaining targets are both adjacent Connor at the ballista. One has real messed up leg. It was his right leg, not his left leg. Anyway, Gent gets a headshot on him. He's dead. The remaining defender slashes at Connor with his saber, swinging low the first time before getting Connor in the right elbow the second time for 14 slashing damage. Hex is up. Hex gets an angle on the guy by taking a step back and firing through the railing for the upper deck. Fires with his laser pistol, gets him in the left foot, the left knee, and he clings to the ballista for support as he blasts him in the right foot. Then it's Connor's turn. The guy is just barely hanging on to this ballista for dear life. And Connor stabs with the javelin with a nat 20, boom, right to the femoral artery. He dead as hell. Both his legs are basically ripped open. They all gain 50 gold for taking control of the bloody fury. There's still ballista ammo, though. There's one shot loaded and three more on hand. Connor says, Gent, why don't you check below decks real quick? Then when you get back, we'll see if we can't turn one of their own ballistas against them. And Gent is already on her way down when that order is given. Gent makes a full sweep of the ship's lower decks. The interior of the Bloody Fury is smoky, making it unpleasant to search through, with an investigation check that determined that there isn't much down here of material value. Most of what is down here is packed in quantities that would be difficult for one person to carry. Crates, barrels, heavy ship equipment, etc. They do, however, find five slaves cowering below decks as they make their sweep. There are a motley of drow, azur, drones, and goblins. Gent says, holy shit. Gent will try to approach and appear non-threatening. Realizing they've been spotted, the slaves come out with their hands up. Gent says, we have taken over the ship, but we will do our best to get you safely away. They each look to each other and nervously and nod. Gent says, do I remember seeing life rafts or escape pods? I say, not really. The Royal Dragon was initially performing rescue operations as other ships went down, but that thing's toast. Gent says, okay, I will lead them to the upper decks and show my new friends to Hex and Connor. Connor reaches into a pouch and produces a foldable boat. Dun, dun, dun! Connor and Hex can see the Iron Dawn, the remaining enemy ironclad, nearby. They can also see the black raft with the trebuchet a bit further off. The other rafts are also scattered around. And Gent says, like a dinghy? And Alex says, yeah, basically. We show the rules for the foldable boat. And Gent says, does it look as though the water would be safe for them to escape via dinghy? Do any of you have experience sailing or navigating the water? The foldable boat would be maneuverable enough that they could probably escape while the party and the other Draelic ships press the advance, but the party would probably need to engage the Iron Dawn to draw the enemy's attention away from the escaping boat. The slaves look to one another and shrug. They seem up to it, though this vessel they were assigned to is quite different from the foldable boat. Gent says, okay, we will distract that ship, then you guys can get a chance to jump in this boat and get away as fast as possible. Here, and Gent hands them 100 gold pieces each. Gent's new total is 20,954 gold. If you're looking for work or community, I'm sure we can find you a place with us or with the Kenku. And Connor deploys the boat for them, there are two options for the foldable boat. There's either a more cramped but smaller option, but should be suitable for them to make their escape. The larger version would be a bit of an undue luxury given the situation, and so they pick the smaller one. So, the slaves begin hurrying aboard the magic vessel deployed alongside the ship by Connor. Hex tries turning the ballista at 180 degrees to fire on the trebuchet platforms. On the trebuchet platform, so he aims for that one, and he makes his roll, but he only gets a 3. Hex manages to put a second shot through the trebuchet, shattering it in a blaze of fire. Unfortunately, their shot flies free just as one of the trebuchet shots is hurled through the air. Someone needs to make a quick pilot check. Gent rolls because they have the +1, and they get it with advantage. And from the cheering of their allies, get an 18. The trebuchet's projectile sails overhead, missing the Draelic fleet entirely and landing in the water with a splash. Suddenly, one of the Draelic ships fires on the Iron Dawn, the remaining enemy ship. The damage is catastrophic, causing a massive explosion below decks. The Iron Dawn drifts toward the Bloody Fury, but then begins to drift harmlessly past, sinking as it goes. In a desperate effort, the crewmen on board abandon ship. The three on deck begin climbing up the side of the Bloody Fury. Gent says, someone grab the spear, poke him off. Connor rushes to the side and pokes with a javelin. Everyone who wants to can attack these enemies as they climb the side. One is better dressed than the other two and has a slightly nicer looking blade. Everyone starts firing on the enemies as they climb aboard the Bloody Fury. Connor gets his target right in the side of the face, while Gent hits the enemy captain in the right shoulder. Hex takes a shot from the poop deck, manages to hit the fancy-looking guy in the same shoulder, the captain. Everyone climbed on board, and I think that this is where I'm gonna break.
All right. Intense naval battle.
Yeah, because I think the next the battle then continues, like they fight the guys on the ship, and then they even go and fight the Minotaur on the trebuchet platform.
Well, since we got a little bit of time left, why don't we look at a few more of these fun sort of random tables before there's a whole section in the middle here about like the actual rules of Gozer, but of course, there's just tables upon tables of fun stuff to look at. So what do you say, Tom? Should we look at a few of these random tables?
What do you want me to roll on? What are we doing?
Let's do some treasure on page 13 of the source book. The pretty ones died. They left a bunch of stuff behind. You probably shouldn't mess with it, but you will anyway. So first, you roll a d6 to determine the type of treasure.
All right. Five.
Five, some odd armor. And then the table for odd armor is on page
Page
16.
18 of the
Yeah,
PDF.
but 16 of the book proper. I guess the PDF pages count the covers.
Count the cover.
So here's a big D66 list of odd armors that you can roll on. You found some odd armor. What is it?
43. I found Bracers of Brutality. Times two damage, three times a day. That's
That's
great.
pretty badass. And as I look through
Really
these, I'm
ripping you some
realizing
people.
like this odd armor, it's all pretty neat. Like I see here, number 33 is bird mail, lets you fly once per day. Oh, and number 34 is a giant toenail that serves as a stinky shield and adds one to your defense.
There's a little thing underneath here that's armor breaking. Breaking equals armor reduced by one. Shields and helms break first. There's a D6 for break effects, and then there's also risk an embellishment question mark. You roll a D20 to get an embellishment.
Let's give it a shot. So you've got your bracers of brutality.
Do I want to go for an embellishment?
Yeah, go for an embellishment. Because as we established, beyond those bracers, you have no armor. Plutar has no armor.
These bracers are unlucky versus lasers.
No. What are the rules on luck? Light, da, 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 da.
I bet that lucky is advantage and unlucky is
It's
disadvantage.
probably, here we go. Yeah, it's probably something like that. That's not it. You know, here is where the downside of the crazy layout lies, because it's harder to find the heading. But here we go. Lucky rolls. Plus two.
Oh, plus two to roll. Stacked luck equals one per extra luck. Unlucky, minus two or worse.
So
This stacks.
they're
So it's more like old
penalties,
D&D
yeah.
than new
It's more
D&D.
penalties rather than disadvantage. When rolling in
More like
defense,
Pathfinder.
armor reduced by one if you fumble or graze. So cool, you found some odd armor. Unfortunately, those bracers are unlucky against lasers. It's lasers, right?
They're probably covered in mirrors that I like, they'll shoot off in my eye.
I like that. Why don't we roll up a weird weapon that you found?
A weird weapon. Okay, what do I roll?
It's a D66.
D66. Forty-three.
Didn't you just get 43 on the
Lung
other one? You
piercing.
did.
I did.
A 1d6 damage thin cutlass. On a solid hit, target is stunned but takes no damage. So you got a cutlass.
Lung piercer. Sounds like the vile
It
rapier.
does. And I guess your special ability with it is that you can hit them with the butt of the cutlass to stun them.
Oh, I was thinking that it's actually like I pierce them right in their lung and then they have trouble breathing.
But it also says 1d6 damage. Thin cutlass, and then on a solid hit, target is stunned for no
Oh.
damage. But I mean, it could be that as
Yeah.
well. That's fun. There's some other good ones here. The fire-breathing fist, a demon face gauntlet, 1d6 punch damage, and it spits fire once per day. 1d8 damage versus 1d6 close targets. Metalhead, a robot-headed mace, 1d6 damage, and it does lightning bolt once per day. The Tiger Mouth, a toothy mouth, 1d6 bite damage, and on a solid hit, it does real damage. For our last one, let's do... Well, actually, let's do two of these. First, let's roll up some super tech. So first, you gotta roll a few d6 tables here. You found some tech. Can you figure it out?
I got a 5.
Hey, only through cunning can you figure it out. Does it work?
Hey, cunning's my best one.
But does it work?
It's 4. So yeah, it's functional.
And what's its power source?
2. I plug it in.
You plug it in, and then finally D66 to determine what it is.
Thirty-three
this time. It is a mouther mucker. You throw a mouth on a nearby target and speak through it in the target's voice or language. That's neat. So you stick a mouth on your target, and then that lets you speak through that mouth in the target's voice and language. Weird. Uh-oh, the device died. Can a wizard bring it back? Roll d20.
Four.
It's broken forever. Darn, you got one use out of your mouther mucker. And then it broke forever.
There's also, like, the next page is, like, does your treasure have a secret property and it's listed as high risk?
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest we round out things with. Let's try a secret property. First, you got to roll a d6.
All right. Got a 4.
No, you poor bastard. It has no secret properties.
Okay, fair enough.
But let's do a secret. Let's do a secret property. It's a D66.
2D6. 54.
It feeds 1D6 people a day.
Oh, wow.
I guess, it makes me think, like, maybe this mouth mucker, can regurgitate nutrients like a bird. It feeds one, I mean... How else would it feed 1d6 people a day? Food must come out of that mouth. Oh, there's some bling. Tom, there's some bling. Roll a d20.
Yeah, I see.
You got
that.
Some bling.
Okay. 9.
9. You got a wristband. It's hidden under those bracers, though.
Hey. Yeah. Maybe it's the bracers that make the food. I'm trying to figure that
out. Oh, yeah, maybe. Weird, but it's pretty fun, and I'm having a lot of fun rolling just on all these tables. That in itself is enjoying. It is entertaining, and makes me wonder, like, does the game underneath all this even need to be good if I'm just having so much fun getting you to roll on different things? Like, here's a whole page that's just the adventure machine. Roll on the tables to create an adventure. This I really do think this would work for solo RPG playing as well, because sure gives you a lot of tables and elements to bring into your game. Even just like some recent events, you know, there's a whole table on recent things that happened. So that's Gozer. I think I'll at least do one more episode on this, because clearly there's a lot more to find in the margins of this crazy source book. But, hey, this is pretty cool. I like this. I really like the design, and I like that even though at a glance it seems, like, almost incomprehensible, upon further examination, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, we can figure this out. It's not actually that difficult.
Yep. Yeah, It's a cool game. I like it. It's probably, I don't know, is I was almost gonna say it's the one I'm most interested in out of the ones you got me for Christmas, but very hard to
Yeah, we
say.
haven't done Meat Punks Forever yet, so.
Extreme Meat
That's
Punks
right.
Forever. All right, so that was episode 176 of Compare and Campaign, recorded on the 9th of January, 2024. If you want to get in touch with us, see when we post new episodes, or follow us, check us out on Facebook, Compare and Campaign on Facebook. Or if you want to see our show notes and supplemental materials, check out compareandcampaign.wordpress.com. Anything else, McGill?
Level up, get that goose.
In the land of the goos, you can steal whatever you want. It's all haunted. Not me.